This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge, in for Frank Stasio. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments tomorrow on a case that could cause as many as 500,000 North Carolinians to lose subsidized health coverage. The case, King v. Burwell, questions the legality of the federal government doling out subsidies to citizens in states that do not have their own established health care exchanges. North Carolina is one of 37 states without its own exchange, and a 2013 law by the North Carolina legislature prevents the governor from pursuing creation of an exchange. Donald Taylor is an associate professor of public policy at Duke University who's been monitoring the developments of the case. Don, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So can you explain what this case is about? It's really kind of about four words.
Right. So in 2012, we had a Supreme Court case to ask, was it constitutional to have an individual mandate? The Supreme Court said yes. This case is not a constitutional question. It's a question of textual interpretation. It says, has the government, meaning the Obama administration, oversteps its bounds by giving tax credits to people who have bought health insurance through healthcare.gov? The plaintiffs say that the text of the law that was passed does not allow that. The government says it does allow it. The Supreme Court has to decide.
And so explain both sides of the case. Why are the plaintiffs arguing for something like this?
So if you go back to when the law was being created, the idea was we're going to have state-based exchanges. I actually personally thought once the law passed that most every state would set up an exchange, because if you have a conservative state saying we don't like the federal government, how in the world would they then want the federal government to run the exchange for their own citizens? But in fact, a lot of states, to show opposition to the Affordable Care Act, said, well, we're not going to have anything to do with it. That's what our General Assembly did. So the federal government set up an exchange, which people know as healthcare.gov. So that's how we got to the point where you have about 14 states that set up an exchange, but the majority, like North Carolina, who did not. And so once the tax credits started flowing, you had this litigation come about that said that it was not allowed by the text of the law, and specifically the phrase, what does it mean to have an exchange established by a state? That's really what's being litigated.
So the plaintiffs are saying that they shouldn't, because they're in states that don't necessarily have an exchange, they shouldn't have to get the health insurance.
Yes, the claim is, like in California, which very immediately after the passage of the law started setting up their own exchange, even the plaintiffs here would say, well, the tax credits are fine to flow there. But in a state like North Carolina that didn't move to take on all the mechanics of the exchange, they're saying that means they have not established an exchange and therefore the tax credits cannot flow. Just like the executive branch always does, they brought about regulations after a law is passed. There's many nooks and crannies to be filled in with any law. And the IRS said that tax credits could flow to people in healthcare.gov. And the plaintiffs say that's illegal. And so in the end, it sounds like a very simple, very narrow question, and in one sense it is, but it's got big consequences.
So what would happen if the plaintiffs were to win the case?
So first, let me just say there's a great uncertainty. I know no one who predicted the mixture of what the Supreme Court held in 2012. So even saying the plaintiffs winning, who knows exactly what that might look like in a decision. But let's say we had the simplest plaintiff win possible, and the Supreme Court just said tax credits can't flow via healthcare.gov. In North Carolina, in our open enrollment period that just ended February 28th, about 560,000 North Carolinians signed up for health insurance, private health insurance. About 515,000 of them got tax credits. So what that would mean is that presumably the 515,000 people would no longer get tax credits. And if you're looking for a sort of a sense of magnitude of what that would mean, on average, and so this is an average, the true premium of folks who signed up for coverage in this last open enrollment period is about $415 a month. But the actual amount that the individuals who signed up are paying is about $100 a month. So they will be losing about $315 a month on average of subsidy. So, you know, over $3,600 a year. And so the problem and the fear is that people, when they thought they're going to have to pay $100 a month, now they have to pay $415 a month. Some of them are going to drop coverage, and you would expect the ones that would continue coverage, sort of scrape together the money to make it work, will be the people that are sickest. And if any insurance market, being car insurance, health insurance, homeowners insurance, only has sick people or poor risks, then the insurance market will blow up.
This is like a death spiral.
Yes. The technical term is death spiral, which simply means that the good risks leave the market, the bad risks stay. The premiums year to year are set based on experience of the total insured pool. And so if only sick people are left, then the premiums go up, which further, you know, pushes out good risks. So if you simply pull away the tax credits, the healthcare.gov state-based insurance markets like the one in North Carolina, it's just hard to imagine how they can survive without some sort of intervention.
And we talk about 500,000 people in North Carolina and something like 6 million people nationwide. When you think about all of that money that might be lost because people aren't having insurance or their claims, this is just a tremendous amount of money that could be impacted nationwide.
In one sense, yes, it is a tremendous amount of money, but I mean, it's a country of 310 million people. So in one sense, one of the realities of the Affordable Care Act is that it mostly tried to hold the healthcare system that we have now together. So most people still get coverage from an employer. You have 55 million people with Medicare. You have the Medicaid program that has been changed in some states, not in others. So in that sense, this is a fairly small part of the entire healthcare system of the country, but it's the newest part. It's a place where we've moved people from uninsured to insured, and other people who may have had poorer coverage or less stable coverage to more stable coverage. So essentially the ACA said, let's try to hold together the vast majority of the health system and cobble on an individual-based insurance market. So it's that part of the sort of the sidecar, if you will, of the health system that could sort of fall off if this, if you had a plain ruling for the plaintiffs.
But it must be rather terrifying. I mean, I spoke with people who were able to sign up for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act here in North Carolina. And I think the thought that their premium on a monthly basis would potentially go up by $300, that would make a gigantic impact in someone's yearly budget.
Oh, of course. And many people who were uninsured because they couldn't afford premiums in individual market before. So one of the big problems is lack of affordability, and another one is folks being sick. And so, you know, everybody says they're for, you know, not underwriting or not having pre-existing conditions count against people. But when you do that, then you've also got to address the issue of affordability. Just taking away the tax credit sort of pulls out one of the legs of the chair, so to speak.
I'm speaking with Donald Taylor today on The State of Things. So can you tell us how this might affect Governor Pat McCrory's recent stance on Medicaid expansion here?
It's a good question. I mean, I think the governor has begun to slowly say that the state needs to begin to think of ways to expand Medicaid. I actually, you know, really agree with that. Further, I would say I agree with the governor that we don't need to simply expand the existing Medicaid program that we have, that what we really need to do as a state is use the leveraged federal money to jumpstart a state, a North Carolina-specific health reform, commit to collecting data, and but by that I mean to monitor how the health system is moving and sort of become a leader in health reform. I think the governor has said because of this case, he wants to wait and see what the Supreme Court, you know, rules before, you know, going further with Medicaid. You know, there are other states where Republican governors and general assemblies have decided to go ahead with Medicaid expansion, even a privatized Medicaid expansion. But, you know, he has said he wants to hear what the Supreme Court says first, which in one sense, I follow the logic of that.
As someone who's been following this issue very closely, you actually have your own plan for healthcare reform in North Carolina.
I put out a white paper. Plan might be a bit grand. Plan implies sort of, you know, very detailed.
You have an idea.
Yes,
an attempt.
I've put together a white paper that basically says, you know, we do need to come up with a North Carolina specific health reform approach. And I think many people in the state, for a variety of reasons, some of them may be better reasons than others, don't like the existing Medicaid program. So that's fine with me for us to try to come up with a more privatized approach, which might have us leveraging the extra federal money from the state to help people purchase private health insurance. So I think that we should be able to put something like that together. And I think we could, North Carolina needs to take the opportunity of this extra federal money to try to jumpstart our own state-specific health reform. And if we believe that expanding insurance coverage as part of reform is important, there will never be a more financially advantageous way to do it than what we have now.
Well, this conversation will all begin tomorrow in the U.S. Supreme Court. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Donald Taylor is an associate professor of public policy at Duke University. Just ahead, guns and the civil rights movement. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.